You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Grizzlies show, this Monday edition of the show. Grizzlies take on the Pelicans tonight. They lost over the weekend to the Spurs. We'll talk about that game as well as some other breaking news that happened today. We'll talk about Chandler Parsons and the Grizzlies, I guess, are separated. We'll talk about what that means as well. In the second segment of our show today, we will have our Monday mailbag like we always do. We've got several questions, so we'll try to tackle those as best as we can. In the last segment of our show, we got Preston Ellis from the Bird Rights joining me to talk about this Grizzlies-Pelicans game. So we'll talk about the Pelicans matchup in the third segment with Preston. He'll give us his insight from the Pelicans side of things, what we can expect from that game with the Grizzlies tonight. Hopefully the Grizzlies can get back on the right side of things against the Pelicans, who are having a very similar year to the Grizzlies, and they started off strong and now are fighting with the Grizzlies. They're in 14th. Grizzlies are in 11th in the Western Conference, both just a few games out of the 8th spot. So we'll talk a bit about that game in the third segment. Let's start with the Grizzlies losing to the Spurs. You know, there's not much here. I'd love to break it down for you and tell you that it's, you know, there's something different, but Grizzlies just get blown out here. There's not much here other than the Grizzlies get blown out late in the fourth quarter. I mean, it really wasn't a game at all. Late in the fourth quarter, younger guys try to get it, pull back with it. And then Javon Carter was out there. Justin Holiday, Dylan Brooks, Jamaica Green, Jaren Jackson Jr., all they're trying to get back, but it was just too much too late. Over the weekend or development of the last few games, the biggest development is Javon Carter. He kind of had a breakout when the previous game where Shelvin Mack only played 4 minutes, and then and the game against the Spurs, Javon Carter plays 22, and then Shelvin Mack gets a DNP CD. So we may have seen the changing of the guard for the backup point guard position. That'll still remains to be seen. We'll need a few more games to really see how that goes. Hopefully that's the case. Again, Javon Carter can't be much worse than Shelvin Mack. But again, there's not a whole lot here. You know, Marc Gasol, Mike Conley didn't play a whole bunch. They didn't play at all in the fourth quarter. They just got blown out. I mean, there's really no way around it. They didn't play well. Justin Holiday did play. It was 21 minutes, 1 for 7, 2 points. Not a great showing, but again, it was never really a game. So hopefully you'll see more from him against the Pelicans matchup. Now, the other bit of news that broke today as I record this Sunday night, bit of news that broke today was Chandler Parsons. That was the big news, kind of a bombshell from Woj and from ESPN's Ted McMahon. Chandler Parsons and Memphis Grizzlies are agreeing to separate. That is what this is being called. Parsons and it's termed as Parsons is going to leave Memphis, and the organization and his Parsons agent James Dunleavy are going to work to structure a resolution of the future for Chandler Parsons. So Chandler is still owed $38 million. That's $25 million for the following season. I think it's like 12 or so, something like that. 13. I'm not sure the exact numbers, but it's $38 million total is what he's owed on that final deal. So, let's just talk about a little bit what this means. First of all, it came out in this article with Woj and that Woj wrote. I don't know if it's based on Tim Maine's reporting. I'm not sure exactly who's reporting it, but it's Woj or ESPN. Basically, Parsons had been scrimmaging 5-on-5 to kind of prove he had been a go. And apparently, in this article, that he shouted at Wallace during practice. He shouted at Wallace, "Let me play." After hitting 3-pointers during scrimmages, Wallace and the organization had been willing to, offer a G League assignment, but it also told Parsons that may not be enough to convince him that he was ready to go. Apparently, he also shouted some more stuff after, in a scrimmage directed at Wallace. So it seems that the marriage of Chandler Parsons and the Memphis Grizzlies is over. Now, will it be over immediately or in the very near future? I doubt it. I'd be I would really doubt it. And we'll talk about what their options are here in a minute. But the Grizzlies have all the cards here. I mean, Parsons doesn't have a whole lot of options. Parsons really has declined to do exactly what they asked him to do, which, again, I see both sides of this as we talked about it before. I get the idea that you don't want to play in the hustle or play in the G League. But at the same time, I don't think on what they reportedly asked is go down and play two games. I don't think that's an unreasonable ask to go down and play two hustle games and light it up. And so I get both sides of it. And the fact that Chandler Parsons, they're now at this stalemate where they won't, but neither one's going to budge. They're at the stalemate where they want him to go play in the hustle. He says no. Well, they're not going to play him without blowing the hustle, and he's not going to do that, so he's not going to play. So now they're in this weird stalemate where the Grizzlies can just let it be because they've made it very clear what they want him to do, and he doesn't want to do that. So they can just continue on their ways, and they can just – the Grizzlies have all the leverage here because they're going to pay this contract no matter what. So they can just make him inactive, keep him on the roster, tell him to go do whatever you want to do. You're going to be inactive for the foreseeable future, and we're going to pay you, and that's it. So it really just depends on what Chandler Parsons wants. It's kind of up to Chandler Parsons. If Chandler Parsons really wants to get out, and he really wants to get out right now, then they can start to talk about a buyout for less money, for less than the $38 million. I don't think that happens. I don't think that either party is interested in doing that at all right now. I don't think it's smart for the Grizzlies to do that either. So I don't think either one does that. I don't think you see this get resolved right away. I think it's going to be quite a bit. Now, the Grizzlies have options. Options are for the Grizzlies are they could obviously trade Chandler's contract this year. I don't think they get in that trade discussion with pretty much of anybody without including a first-round pick, and it's been reported they're not willing to do that. So I think for most people, getting taken on this contract is probably a non-starter without a first-rounder. And so I think that's really kind of where things stalls because the Grizzlies are reportedly unwilling to give up first-rounder in this deal. And so I think those discussions probably fall pretty short. They could obviously, like I said, offer to buy out the final or the remaining $38 million on the contract. It's unlikely that happens. There's still a lot of discussions they're going to have, but I think it's unlikely that happens. If they do buy him out, whatever they buy him out for remains as a dead cap hit. So it doesn't work like you just buy someone out and then that the money's just freed up. It doesn't work like that. So even if you want him to get bought out, the money still hits the cap regardless, whatever they buy him out for. Now, if they decide not, they decide, well, we're going to decide on $25 million instead of 38. They could decide that, but it still will, that still 25 will still hit the salary cap whenever they do that. So which is why I think it's very unlikely the Grizzlies do that now. The Grizzlies could use the stretch provision, which is basically a form of a buyout, but it stretches the remaining salary or remaining money over 3 years. So if they waited to the summer, they could buy him out there. They could stretch him then, which basically you take turn $25 million into over 3 years. So it gives you flexibility, which is what I've always thought was the most likely scenario. Barring a trade, I mean the Grizzlies first and foremost is they want a trade to get off the contract. That's what they're gonna want. But I think the stretch provision in the summer, not now, but in the summer is still the most likely scenario. And then the option is the last one I just said. They could just make him inactive and just keep him on the roster and just say, we're going to roll with what we got. And then at next year's trade deadline, when that contract's easier to swallow because it comes off the books in 3 months, that's when the contract gets more value or more valuable than it is now. It doesn't look as so just glaring to you that it's just hard to swallow. So that's where that becomes – that's where it gets peak value is next year at the trade deadline when you're have a team that wants money and then wants cap flexibility, stuff like that, where you can swallow the pill of 3 months of this contract. It's not that big a deal. It comes off the books. You're not going to re-sign them. So that's where the Grizzlies hold all the cards here. That's where the Grizzlies are. They were planning on paying this money anyway, so they can just sit him and say, we're going to keep you inactive for as long as we want, don't come around. We don't, you know, we don't need you here. We're going to still pay you your money. And then we'll deal with this next year. We'll deal with this in the off season, or we'll deal with this, you know, next, trade deadline, which you realize is still a year and a half away. And so that's where the leverage is in the Grizzlies' hand. And it's just not as easy as just buy him out and he goes away. It doesn't work like that. It is not as just as easy as we'll pay him his money and he'll move on about his business. We'll free up a roster spot. We'll free up some money. It doesn't work like that. So will you free up a roster spot? Sure. But you still have to pay the money. Still have to pay the money against the cap. There are a lot of things that go into this, and if that's why the Grizzlies had the ultimate leverage, and if Chandler Parsons wants out, and if he wants out now, then you can start to say, hey, well, I'll take a lot less money, or, you know, then I don't think that's going to happen. But if that's the way he could get out now, if he says, hey, I'll take a lot less money on the buyout if I just can get out and either go to another team or whatever. But you're talking about a guy who largely is probably going to be his last contract. I mean, barring something crazy, I think Chandler Parsons is going to get a contract outside of, you know, a couple million for the year, maybe even veterans minimum on a team that takes a serious flyer on him. Barring that, this is Chandler Parsons' money for the rest of his life. This is it. So you think about yourself, would you put yourself in a situation, would you just say, I'll take a lot less money, or just wait it out for a year, get your money, because what you get next might not be anywhere close to what you think you should deserve or whatever, but, you know, I think they get him a couple million, maybe a couple million, maybe more likely veterans minimum on a team that's taking a flyer. Let me talk about a guy that hasn't been healthy in 3 years. So this is likely Chandler Parsons' last payday, and so I think he probably maximizes that to his fullest extent. So that's why I don't see this getting resolved anytime soon from the Grizzlies' point of view, because I don't think they can trade it right now, because I don't think people are going to take this contract without a first round pick, and I don't think the Grizzlies are willing to give up a first round pick. And second, they can just wait it out to the summer, where they can either use a stretch provision, which is either that or keeping him on the roster until next trade deadline, when they can make it even more valuable, depending on what you try to do in the offseason. Those are the two most likely scenarios, I think, for Chandler Parsons. Just because this report comes out that he's done with the Grizzlies, nothing's changed. He's not going to play. He was never played anymore. Now the only difference is he's not going to be on the medical reports. Maybe it gets resolved quickly. Again, I think that's up to Chandler Parsons and ultimately what he wants to do. But coming up next, we're going to do a Monday mailbag in the second segment. Third segment of the show, make sure you stay tuned for my conversation with Preston Ellis of the Bird Rights from SB Nation, SB Nation's blog. Great insight with him about the Pelicans. But coming up next, we're going to be doing the Monday mailbag. Welcome back to the show. As always, make sure you follow the show on Twitter at LockedOnGrizz. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at King_Producer. Make sure you're getting your questions in every single week. You can get them to me on Twitter. You can reply to the tweets I put out. You can DM me. My DMs are open. You can send me a message on Facebook. Go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/LockedOnGrizzlies. Or you can just email it to me if you're old-fashioned and don't like the Twitters and the Facebooks. You can email them to me at LockedOnGrizz@gmail.com. I'll get them that way as well. Got a couple questions for you today. The first question comes from JB Clark on Twitter at Letters Clark. Let's see. This says, we've had four coaches who all had their own strengths and weaknesses. We have had lots of twos and threes and unending cast of overpromise and undelivered rotation players. We have had one of the best point guards and centers in the league. At what point do we try a new front office? Why isn't Chris Wallace's job up for grabs? That's probably a deeper question than you probably realize. I don't know. The short answer is I don't know. I've written several things on grizzlybearblues.com that you can check out there. You just search for my stuff that I've written and I've been very critical of Chris Wallace and the job he does. And you can even go back to the same thing we're talking about with Parsons. He's directly responsible for this contract that he gave us Parsons, whether you liked it or not, but you know, they knew what was going on with his knee. They didn't think it was bad as it seemed. And so they get in the contract anyway. So, you know, there's a point where a lot of these decisions that are coming back to haunt the Grizzlies in the summer of 2016, where they fired David Fisdale, they gave up a first rounder for Deontay Davis and Roddy Zagorek. They signed Chandler Parsons. I mean, all these things, and it's the same front office over and over. Yes, the answer is yes. They should be held directly responsible. and they should be let go. They should move on from management. Robert Parrish should move on from Chris Wallace. Robert Parrish should have moved on from Chris Wallace a long time ago. Chris Wallace is not a good general manager by any shape of the imagination. He's just not. Yes, the Grizzlies have done their best to keep up with the mistakes they make, but they consistently put themselves in bad situations. They've not drafted well. The trades they've made are largely luck. I mean, if you look at the Marc Gasol trade, that was Marc Gasol. No one knew what Marc Gasol was going to be. No one knew that. And if you and if anybody told you that, they're lying. They're lying to you. No one knew what, no one knew that D-Bo was going to come here and all of a sudden not be the guy he was with the Jailblazers. No one knew that. Zach Randolph was a throwaway. So like, pretending like you thought Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol were going to do anything, it's just nonsensical. It's just not smart. And so, you know, you lucked into the type, those, you know, he lucked into the core four. He lucked into Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph. He brought Tony Allen over as a role player, and Tony Allen was probably the most exciting role player that has been in the NBA for quite some time, and got more notoriety just because of the way he played and the way he connected with this city. And I love all those guys. But pretending like you knew what you're getting with those guys is just not it. And so, yes, this front office made mistake after mistake after mistake. But it starts at the top. And if Robert Parrish is unwilling to, if Robert Parrish is unwilling to, after last year's debacle of literally saying, holding Tyreke Evans out and saying that you're going to trade him because you're holding him out so you don't want him to get hurt because in advance of a trade, saying that publicly, and then not do anything at all, and then let him walk in the offseason, it's just insane to me. And I understand there's some background stuff there that I'm not going to get into this podcast, but it's just insane to me how you can be so inept at that and still have his job. So if Robert Parrish is not moving on from Chris Wallace at that point, you know, I'm not sure that Robert Parrish is going to move on from Chris Wallace. I think Chris Wallace is his guy, and the guys in the front office are the people they want to go with. And so, you know, the answer is yes, they should be held accountable, but I don't think it's going to happen just because of the people that are in place. And I don't know. I'm not sure at this point they even try to move on. Next question is, let me find it right here. It's in by email. Stand by. Here it is. And if I'm probably going to get this name incorrect, and I apologize. It seems French. Might be French. Let me know if it's French. Vrezo Muchemwa. That sounds French. Muchemwa. So we're going to go with that. And again, let me know if it's French. I think it's French. Question about the Grizzlies' defense. When the season started, the consistency was that the Grizzlies' length was causing other teams problems and forcing turnovers. Has the defense itself been figured out by other teams? And if so, and what exactly, or is it something the team has changed in its lineups? Jamaica Green returning from Marc Gasol injury. I think the defense is there still in theory. I think that the problems with the defense are probably one or two pieces. And I actually just wrote an article about this over at grizzlybearblues.com. It's like a couple days old. Literally, I wrote it on Saturday, I think. So you can check that out. I also tweeted it on – I put it out on our Locked On Grizz Twitter feed. But I think the problems with the defense is, A, yes, a lot of times as the season goes on, obviously there's more film to look at. And so, yes, there's some things that have been figured out. But other things are simple, like rotations. The Grizzlies overplay the strong side a lot. They have guys digging down into the paint a lot. And it's largely been three-pointers. They've given up a large amount of three-pointers. Usually the team that plays them in the past couple weeks have averaged more than their average of three-pointers made. And so if you look at that article, literally I put in there with video clips of what the guy, you know, what the Grizzlies are doing wrong of rotating to three-pointers. The other difference is Marc Gasol. Marc Gasol is playing his best defense he's ever played in the beginning of the year, like better than his Defensive Player of the Year campaign year. Better than that, he's playing better than he had ever had. And his defensive rating the first 17 games was like 95 points per game, or 95 rating, and now it's like 109. It's well over a 10-point difference. So the defense kind of starts with Marc Gasol in that first unit. He's not even close to what he was playing before. And that starts with an engaged Marc Gasol. You know, a lot of the stuff, whenever the teams are having side pick and rolls, and you put Mark, and Mark's not even stepping up. So the first problem with their three-pointers and the way they play pick and roll right now, it used to be different in the beginning. They stopped playing it this way now, mainly because of Mark. they were playing the pick high, the screener higher before. So what that means is they were, whenever the person would, the guard would go to run his pick and roll on the opponent's team, Mark would step up higher to his guy. So what that allows you to do is it doesn't allow that guard to turn the corner right away and see the basket. He sees Mark basically. Now, it's great in the sense that you kind of limit their points, but obviously you have to worry about the roll man. And so in that situation, you have to worry about the guard getting screened out, or your big guy getting screened out of the play, and your guard having to deal with the roll man, usually a big guy. In that case, they can throw it, dump it out of their big guy. He can score easily. But now they're playing so far down. They're you know, when they run that side pick and roll, opponents do, Mark's at the free throw line. I mean, he's 4 feet away from their player. He's not even close. And so you're having guards turn that corner, and they're having just an open look at a three, very good three-pointers that are having just wide-open looks, because Mark's not even playing near his big man in the screen part of the pick and roll. And so you have someone who turn the corner, see an open look, and they either shoot the ball or they drive immediately. And then once they drive, then Mark has to step up, or Mike or Garrett or Kyle from the weak side, which is going to be the side they're opposite of. They're either on that, where they should be is where they should be on that, is right on the edge of the paint. But if Mark's sagging off the big man and the guy's turning the corner and he starts his drive, and then Kyle or Garrett, whoever's on the weak side, has to step over even the slightest bit, even the step over one step, when their momentum is carrying them one step in the opposite direction, and when they pass it, they have to stop, plant, and go back the other way. And then by that time, it's too late. By the time, they've already thrown it to their other guard or wing to shoot a three. And so that's their biggest problem with defense is the way they're playing the pick and roll. And it starts with Mark. He's got to start playing up more. But I also think it starts with an engaged Mark. So that's a bit about their defense. Again, if you go to my article on GrizzlyBearBlues.com, check our Facebook page, check the Locked On Grizzlies Twitter feed. It's all out there. That's a little bit more depth with video to see exactly what I'm talking about. It'll give you a better idea to understand. I guess it's hard to explain over a podcast, but it'll give you an idea of what else I'm talking about. I had one more question, and let me see if I can find it. Okay, here it is. Sorry about that, but I found it. It was on our Locked On Grizzlies account. This comes from DB Just DB at OkieTech623 on Twitter. Defensively, what do you see as the Grizzlies' calls for all these threes the Grizzlies are giving up now? On the broadcast, Brevin is a lot about overhelping. It is a schematic fall, or just the players, so I'm going to tip on D. For that question, I think you could probably just see answer two. Again, it has a lot to do with the way they play the pick and roll and the way they play the side pick and roll. And so, that tends, once the guys get into a situation where their guard's driving, they have to help. They can't just let them drive down the middle of the lane. So Mike, Garrett, Kyle, those guys on the weak side have to step into the lane to help. And so they're allowing wide open threes, but that starts with personnel and the way they start to play the pick and roll. The way they decide to play the screen in action dictates the entire rest of the rotation of the defense. Whether they either hedge super high, which is where they the big man really hedges, really runs further or higher than their screener, so when the guard of the opposite team turns the corner, they turn into a big man. And that really limits that. So whether they hedge, whether they ice, I mean, all these things, the way they play the screen in the start of the action for the Grizzlies dictates the entire defense. So, and that really starts to Mark and the way he plays, because he just happens to be in the pick and roll so much. So that really starts with Mark and the way that's played. But again, check out that article. It'll give you a little bit more information with some video about how it works. Again, thanks for all the questions for Monday Mailbag. If you haven't submitted yours, make sure you submit it next week. You can email me about basketball, non-basketball, whatever you want to ask me. Shoot me a question on Twitter, Facebook, email, and we'll take care of it. That's every week on Monday in the second segment of the show. Coming up next, in the next segment, we'll talk with Preston Ellis of the Bird Rights. He and I will talk about this Pelicans matchup and what we can expect from that game. Welcome back to the show. I have Preston Ellis from the Bird Rights, SBNation.com. What's going on, man?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on here.
Yes, I thank you for taking the time out as we record this
on Sunday night and try to get these in the night before my actual shows go out. But got to talk about this Grizzlies Pelicans matchup tomorrow. The Grizzlies and the Pelicans are neck and neck for 13th, 14th in the NBA Western Conference. Still not too far out of the eighth seed, so they're, I think, still be going to be very much in that mix at the end of the year. But right off the bat, is this where you thought the Pelicans might be at this point in the year?
No, I think Anthony Davis said it pretty well to Jen Hale a couple of nights ago when the Pelicans lost to the Nets. She said, do you want to play for a 14th seeded team? And he said, no, next question. And that's just kind of where the state of the Pelicans are. They haven't won consecutive games in 6 weeks. After the first week of the season, when the Pelicans were flying high, they were 4-0. They had the best offensive rating, pretty much in NBA history. And they were just one of the most threatening, dangerous teams in the association. They blew the doors off the first three teams they faced, and the fourth game is when they lost Elfrid Payton. And it's kind of been up and down ever since then. This team isn't deep enough to really sustain any injuries to speak of. They still have Nikola Mirotic out. He's been out for about a month. So it's been a really difficult season. I'm sure everybody sees the churning rumor mill that just simply won't evade New Orleans. And the vultures are swirling, and they want him. They want him in L.A. They want him in Boston. Pretty much every respective team across the association wants a piece of him. And if the Pelicans keep losing, their wishes might come true.
Do you think that Anthony Davis, A, wants out of New Orleans? And or do you think the Pelicans would they actually move him?
You know, Gail Benson just had some recent comments to Larry Holder of The Athletic. He primarily writes for the New Orleans Saints, not the Pelicans, but of course they're a shared organization. And she said, if and when the time comes for Anthony Davis to leave, and I'm not quoting her directly, she just said that she would support his decision. Now, that obviously means if he asked to be traded, she would be willing to hear him on that and facilitate that deal. But it also kind of lends credence to the possibility that maybe the Pelicans won't trade Anthony Davis and just let him live out his contract over the next year and a half and try like hell to build up a franchise this summer if they're not able to win this season, to put that winner around him, because the Pelicans do not want to dismiss Anthony Davis. He's going to have to ask them to leave, even if they fire Dell Demps, even if they fire Alvin Gentry. No one is going to convince Gail Benson that Anthony Davis should not stay in New Orleans except for Anthony Davis himself.
Yeah, the Grizzlies and the Pelicans have so many parallels this season. They started off great. Both teams that look promising now are very much, far, far beyond, beyond where they started. Both have, star players that potentially are in talks always, seems like, always getting moved. Have coaches that are, being questioned all the time, multiple losing game streaks. I keep seeing things on Twitter about the Pelicans, and I honestly, from you, sometimes you retweet stuff, and I think that's about the Grizzlies just when I just read it really quickly, and it's so weird that these teams have such a very similar storyline. I know what's wrong with the Grizzlies. What's wrong with the Pelicans?
Two specific things. One, and this one is hard to speak on, but it's effort. The Pelicans, for example, against the Brooklyn Nets, who are 16th in scoring, allowed 73 points in the first half. And that's not because Brooklyn was just scorching hot from three-point range. Although many teams are, the Pelicans are not good at defending the three-point line. And it's because they struggle to communicate. They struggle to match up and transition, even following something as simple as a free throw. But primarily what has been the net result for the losses, the Pelicans have only lost one game by 10 points or more. And I'm doing this from memory, but I want to say the past 4 or 5 weeks, their net rating in their last 22 games is just -1. So they're losing all these games by a very small margin. And it all has to do with their clutch time stats. Now they're 25th in the clutch, but when it comes to offensive rating in the clutch, they are dead last at 88.1. And that is well below the average for any team across the association. The Cleveland Cavaliers are next with, I think, 91.3. So a full 3 points ahead of the Pelicans. They're pretty good defensively during that time. Their rating's 107. But offensively, they just can't manage to find offense. They settle for deep contested two-point shots, and it really cost them games. For example, a month ago today, when they played the Grizzlies, they were leading by 8 with 5:11 left, and then the Grizzlies went on a 12-3 run and comfortably won the game by 4, and that's just kind of been the story with the Pelicans the past 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's very weird how teams can kind of go up and down like that. The Grizzlies always seem to struggle, though, with people off the bench. It never fails, as there's always seems to always be a bench player that can kind of go crazy for any team at any given night. We've seen Gerald Green do it from the Rockets. But what's that person, or who's that player on the bench that the Grizzlies fans need to kind of watch out for, maybe raise an eyebrow out when he comes in the game?
Well, if Nikola Mirotic is able to play, he would definitively be that player. There was a rumor that he might be made available, though it's probably more likely that he'll be back against the Cavaliers. I want to say that game is on Wednesday in New Orleans. So as the roster is currently constituted, if Jahlil Okafor can get some more minutes, he's a guy that's very dangerous, can get into double digits very quickly. But of course, the name that I should mention is Darius Miller. And Darius Miller is a troubling one, although they will be playing in New Orleans where he is a bit better. But this guy can very easily go off for 20 points. And he can very easily go 1 for 9 and give just 3 points. So he's pretty much the Pelicans bench as far as high volume scoring against the Nets. Another one that I should mention, 116 of the Pelicans' 121 points all came from the starters, just 5 points from the bench. And that's kind of been another story for the Pelicans, is just getting that help outside of their top five. Their top five is very good. Etwan Moore, Jrue Holiday, Elfrid Payton, Julius Randle, Anthony Davis. There aren't many starting fives across the association who can go head to head with these guys. The problem is, as soon as one or two or three of these guys leave the floor, that's where you see the doors just get blown off the Smoothie King Center. So they're going to need a lot from Darius Miller. And if Darius Miller doesn't have a proficient shooting game, then they're going to need it from Okafor.
You could have absolutely substituted Grizzlies for everything you said there about the starting lineup. The Grizzlies also have an excellent starting lineup, one of the best in the NBA, just like the Pelicans, but as well, their bench is just maybe just as bad, if not worse. So it will be interesting to see how these benches both kind of play each other, how the coaches maybe leave some starters out there to kind of ride through the bench players as well. How do the Grizzlies win this game? What are some of the weaknesses they need to try to, exploit for this Pelicans team to be able to win?
I mean, if history is any indicator, all the Grizzlies have to do is keep it close throughout and get to that final 5 minutes. And if they can keep the game within 6 to 8 points, then history tells us the Pelicans will fold. With that being said, Elfrid Payton's back. He's been back for 3 games now. And we're hoping that in those minutes, Elfrid Payton can kind of navigate the offense and make them a bit more efficient. But against the Nets, we simply did not see that. I can't remember specifically how many points they were down, but like I said, 73 points in the first half. So if the Grizzlies can get up fast, that's something that the Pelicans have tended to let teams do, specifically in transition, specifically at the 3-point line, if the Grizzlies can knock down those shots. Otherwise, they just have to keep it close throughout, and the Pelicans will likely fold.
And last question, I'll get you out of here. What is the starting lineup we can expect to see against the Grizzlies?
Okay, so I wouldn't expect Nikola Mirotic, even if he is ready to go, to get those starting minutes. Anthony Davis and Julius Randle have been excellent, specifically on the offensive end. Julius Randle's numbers have been quite staggering. Other than Anthony Davis, Joel Embiid, and Giannis Antetokounmpo, he's the fourth leading scorer and rebounder in the NBA right now. It's something like 25 points and 12 or 13 rebounds per 36 minutes. He averages somewhere around 30 to 31 minutes per game. So they're not crazy numbers. It is pretty spot on with what he's been doing. So those guys, Elfrid Payton has been pretty good at just, he'll kind of lull you to sleep because he navigates the offense from the perimeter, but every now and then he'll take his defender off the dribble and he gets to the cup rather easily. He also likes to run. And I know that's something that the Grizzlies struggle in, 23rd in fast break defense. So that's something that Elfrid Payton could take advantage of. But the number one thing to keep an eye on, one is Jaren Jackson's foul trouble. The last time they matched up, he only managed 14 minutes because he got into foul trouble early. The other one, and this is something I had a back and forth with Joe Mullinax about, is the Jrue Holiday versus Mike Conley matchup. And last time, this is something that Jrue Holiday quite dominated, I would say, holding him to just 2 of 9 shooting, and I think just 9 points on the game, while Jrue Holiday had something to the tune of 20 points, 11 assists, 5 rebounds. I don't remember what else, but he was pretty efficient, 7 of 15 from the floor, as well as holding Mike Conley to a very substandard game by his standards. So that's something that we'll want to keep an eye on when the two of those guys go head-to-head. Can Jrue Holiday overcome him once more?
Excellent insight from Preston Ellis. Again, thanks so much for joining Preston Ellis from the Bird Rights at ASPNation.com. Again, it's great to have you on, man. I appreciate you stopping by and taking the time out, and we'll do it again next time.
Appreciate it. I think we match up with you guys again in 4 or 5 days. So if you're looking to chat, look me up.
We'll do it again, man. Thanks.
Thanks again to Preston Ellis for joining me. I really appreciate it. We'll have him on as the Grizzlies play the Pelicans probably next week, I think. Again, they play the Pelicans again, so we'll try to have him on again to get his thoughts on the previous matchup as well as the next one. Make sure you're following the show on Twitter at LockedOnGrizz. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at King_Producer. If you want to be a featured sponsor on this show, please email me at LockedOnGrizz@gmail.com. Follow us and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts, or online at LockedOnGrizzlies.com.